Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It's Thursday, April 28th, 2016, and this week we're going to pick up The Bench. Well, actually, the book called The Bench that's on the bench. Joel, I think maybe you should explain this, because this is starting to get confusing.
Already, yeah, we're starting off confusing them already. That's a great sign, Walt.
And we want to get them to call in, too. That's the best part.
Exactly. We're trying to get people to call in, and we're confusing them. So that's a great start.
By the way, if you want to call in at some point, we should mention, feel free to we can't actually take a call during the show because we don't have the technology yet to do that. That's one reason we're hoping to get a big radio gig. But once that comes, we'll be able to do it. In the meantime, if you'd like to talk with us about some of this stuff, send us an email. My email address is walt@loatoday.net. Joel's is, predictably, joel@loatoday.net. Just send us an email, say, hey, I'd like to do it sometime. We usually record on a Saturday, although we can be flexible about when to do the recording. And we'll include you and talk about, you know, what aspect of LOA you want to talk about. So feel free.
We really do encourage our listeners to consider calling in. It would be great to have someone to, whatever area you want to talk about, law of attraction, we would be up for it. So thank you for considering it, and please, please do. So as you mentioned, we were going to talk about The Bench on the Bench. As you know, and our audience probably knows, I wrote a book called The Bench, and it basically is an autobiography along with some tips about addiction and recovery, and it's sort of a project dear to my heart. It incorporates just so many aspects of my life, the struggles through addiction, the triumph through recovery, the loss of my son. And I've had great feedback on the book, and I believe we're around 4,200 copies sold, which is...
it's phenomenal is what that is.
It is good for just a book that has never, ever taken any kind of publicity other than just sort of word of mouth at this point.
And by an author who was previously unknown, who had no following. That's pretty darn good.
Yes. So I'm really proud of where it's going. I'm already working on my second book. But on March 12th of this year, I was in Florida visiting where my friend Rick was having his 25th anniversary for his being free from gambling. And he's the gentleman that I refer to in my book that he was actually operating the treatment center that I went to for my addiction to gambling. Ah. And he lives right down the road from the topic of the book, The Bench. And it is a beautiful little bench on Anna Maria Island. And over the years, I've returned to that bench. And in the beginning, it was out of desperation. Over the last several years, it's just basically been out of gratitude. Anytime I have a major decision to make.
And by the way, Anna Maria Island, that's Florida, right?
Anna Maria Island in Florida, yes. Right. It's just south of Tampa area.
Right.
So I always return to the bench when I have a decision to make, when I'm down there. And in the remains of my son, TJ, have been placed at the bench as well. So it's a very spiritual place for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided when I was down there that I put a book, a copy of The Bench, in a plastic Ziploc bag, and I just left it on the bench in hopes that somebody who would relate to it would come along and pick up the book and read. I mean, somebody might have just thrown it in the trash or ignored it.
It's a cool idea, though, a cool way. First of all, it's a little bit of publicity.
Really sort of,
but it's also a cool way to get people to actually experience, you know, what happens when you put something out there. You literally put something out there. You put a book out there just to see where the universe would deliver it.
Exactly. And I remember asking the universe, I hope that someone would be touched by this and pick it up and it have meaning in their life. So that was, you know, like I said, March 9th, I believe March 12th I was there. So I forgot about it and got back home, and life's going very well. Life's really, you know, kicking along. And I've had several emails about the book, but one came in on April 3rd from a gentleman named Peter, and he lives in Canada, and he began to tell me that he picked up the book that was on the bench, and he was visiting Anna Maria Island as he had the last 30 years of his life, and he saw that, and he described the scenario where he walked by one day, and the book was in the bag, And he told his wife, he said, I wonder if somebody just left that there. And she just said, well, I'm sure they were out in the water, just leave it alone. And he ignored it. Well, they walked back from their long walk down the beach and came back. The book was still there. And he said to himself, some reason I want to pick that book up. And just ignored it and went back to his hotel room. Well, they were leaving the next day. So he actually told his wife, I want to go see if that book is still on the bench. Wow. And she laughed. She laughed. She said, I don't understand why you're obsessed with that book. And he just said, I don't know why I'm drawn to that. So he goes there, and sure enough, as soon as he saw it, he picked it up. He said, well, somebody wants me to read this. So he put it in his bag, and he got on it. Now, he enjoyed the book, as he described. He said he was reading it on the way back, and he really was enthralled with the story. But as he got about, I don't know, halfway through the book, he said that he remembers asking, why was I intended to find this book? It's talking about a guy that's a compulsive gambler. He's turning his life around. And while it's a good book, it certainly doesn't really relate to me. And he gets further in the book, as he describes, and he gets to the portion of the book where my son TJ has his accident and passes away. Well, in 2010, his son was killed in an unexpected event as well.
Wow.
And it was at that moment that he realized, now he understood why he was reading the book.
Yeah.
And he began to talk about in his email how he literally shut down for a couple of years after his son died. He wasn't able to get functioning, and he's just now getting back to the point where he's starting to function at full capacity. He describes his daughter-in-law and her two young kids, how the whole family was just devastated by this, the loss of this incredible young man.
Sure.
And the relationship that he developed with first reading about TJ, and TJ is such a influence in a lot of people's lives after they read about him, because he turned his life around in such an incredible way.
Mm-hmm.
So when his son Daniel, by the way, his son's name was Daniel, when Daniel passed away, he just couldn't find any answers. And what the bench gave him was, he realized Daniel would expect him to get his life back. He started realizing, I've got to get motivated to get my life back. I got to turn things around. And this process for him the book made him start thinking about this process of what he needed to do.
Sure.
So I find it amazing, as we listen to this, as I read this email, and it just was such a, it made my day when I got the email.
Oh, yeah. How couldn't it?
Exactly. You know, and then he also describes that while he gives a backstory a little bit, as he's telling me about while he found the book, and he said he was there with his daughter-in-law and his three grandkids, and he started seeing the connections again. He said grandson at when they were home asking him, said, you know, Papa, what are you reading? And he said, he said, it's a book that reminds me a lot of your dad. And he says, well, I want to read it one day. And he says, when you're old enough, I'll let you read this, because it's really a good book. So he's starting to find a connection with himself again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a random event that he picked up the book.
Right.
When I look at that and the law of attraction, when I really believe the universe is at work all the time. And it's doing things that we're putting things out there. He walked by that book two times, didn't pick it up. Third time is when he picked it up. He knew, he felt there was something about it. He said, I don't know why I felt I needed to pick that book up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, halfway through the book, was baffled on why he needed to read the book, and then it became very clear. I've had multiple events in my life happen where chain of events led to another chain of events, which led to great awakenings. You've had these events happen. The law of attraction, when we put out there what we want, what we're seeking, and on some level, this man was seeking peace.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking for some peace, looking for some way to get his life back or get his feeling back. And he didn't even know he was looking for a book written by a guy he's never met. We grew up in another country, actually. You know, he's in Canada, where I'm in the United States. With all of that, the perfect timing, as he described, of walking by the bench a day after I leave that book there, was pretty much, as we talk about coincidence, it is an event that he felt was intended. He said, look at all the things that had to come together for that to happen. He said, I made these reservations last year. I didn't know you would be down on that date. I don't know who you were. I didn't know that. Why didn't somebody else pick up that book? There were, there's a lot of people on the island that day. So he picked up that book, and it lasted until the next day. So this became to him, it became clear to him, and it became clear to me, and reinforced to me, that when we put out what we're needing, even if you don't realize what you're putting out, he was putting out a desperate need for peace. And this gave him some peace.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually going to go off on what seems like a tangent, but trust me, it's not a tangent. You'll see the connection in a moment. One of the things that really confused me very early on, in fact, I had a lot of resistance about for the longest time, was that idea that the law of attraction basically allows you to attract anything through a series of events that look like coincidences but aren't. And that just seems crazy because I'm well versed in math. Math was my strongest subject, now that I think about it. I did better in math than in any other subject. And I understand the law of large numbers. I understand the law of averages. I understand probability. I understand all of that stuff. And this flies in the face of that. This basically says, the law of attraction basically says there is no such thing as probability. And wow. That's an astonishing thought. It's a rock your world kind of thought, and it's a thought that usually leads people with mathematical minds to say the law of attraction is nonsense. It certainly led me that way. I was leaning very strongly that way for the longest time. And you can also look at it from a different point of view and still be in a very strong advocate of the laws of probability, and that is to say that, well, events can happen, and that doesn't mean that they weren't random, that they still fit within the pattern of randomness, but just because they happen doesn't mean that there's no such thing as random events. And that's what I clung to for the longest time after I was initially shaken by this whole concept. Over time, I've come to the realization that we need a better definition of what a random event is. Because truly, a random event, there's nothing that's truly random. All events are processes that result from somebody somewhere having a thought. And when you have a whole bunch of people, a million, literally 7 billion people having thoughts on a regular basis all around the planet, you're going to have events colliding all over the place. You're going to have, an appearance of randomness going on everywhere because we can't see who had the original thought in most cases. Like 99.999% of the time, we can't see who had the original thought that led to X happening. So you end up with this matrix, if you will, of random, seemingly random events going on, seemingly random occurrences happening. And when you realize that they're all happening because of thoughts that people had, you say to yourself, well, you can see where what we call the laws of probability could apply, because what we're really saying is the law of probability is describing events we don't understand how they occurred, so we call them random. But in truth, a so-called random event isn't really random, it's just unknown to us. And that's the key point I wanted to throw in there. So, this guy who got on a plane from Canada, flew to Florida, found the book, and did all that in a chain of events that he set in motion long before he even realized he knew he needed it, that sounds purely random, but it's not. Like all events, this was an example of an event that probably had multiple influences. It probably just wasn't just one thought. It was probably a series of thoughts, and all of them guided him to that one particular place. So it raises a very difficult question, difficult from a mathematical perspective, which is, if there is really no such thing as a random event, and if our laws of probability and laws of averages and so forth are really nothing more than ways of guiding us through some sort of initial understanding of what's actually happening. And what we're recognizing is that it's that we really do have direct influence through our thoughts, not just our actions, but our thoughts on what goes on around us. Then how does that impact our understanding of what happened with the guy who found the book on the bench? Because ultimately, I think it means, ultimately, I think it tells us that these things happen regularly. That it's an occasional event. It happens every day. In fact, these kinds of events happen every moment of every person's day. And when you look at it that way, it becomes earth-shaking. It's a completely different way of looking at things, because now we're no longer victims of random events. Now, actually, we are in control of every single thing that happens in our lives, which is a tremendous responsibility, because, wow, every negative thought that I have, every thought that doesn't serve me comes back to haunt me, and I have nobody to blame but myself. Boo-hoo!
Wow. And that, first of all, that's a very profound statement you just made about the whole concept about the random events. And I, over the years, I can see the events that I can see, the chain of events, the points in time, the seemingly impossible coming together, or the not even relatable. You know, I mentioned, I believe last week, we were talking a little bit about, you know, me eating out of a trash can, relating to my son TJ. He was born in South Carolina. I was born in Florida. There is no possibility that I would randomly meet this child who went through a lot of stuff that really affected his life, and then that somehow meeting out of a trash can 20 years before that or 15 years before that could somehow come together for a relevant point. And all throughout my life, whether it's when I went originally moved from Florida to South Carolina, I thought that was just a horrible chain of events in my life. It turned out to be a great chain of events in my life. And I had to be in position for all that to happen.
And I have to stop for a second here and say, it was a horrible time in your life.
It was.
And it was a great time in your life. It was both.
Well, and here's one, and that, thank you for saying that, because this is where I was going with that next. The concept of time for me is something that's changed over the years. That was a horrible time, and in retrospect, it was one of the greatest times of my life. And they were the same event. Mm-hmm. My perspective is all that changed. And I happen to believe that time is, we think of time as humans in a very limited fashion. So the idea that me going back and thinking about those events and reliving those events, what I thought was a horrible time, I look at that with great fondness now. I remember, you know, when I was up there hating being in South Carolina in the beginning. Now I love South Carolina. I love those times in my life. They were transformative events.
And meanwhile, there's this cynic in the back of my head saying, is he nuts? Is he some sort of masochist or something?
Possibly, by the way. certainly the nuts part.
But, okay.
You know, with that being said, where I'm taking, in fact, the title of my next book is Perspective, the Human Superpower. It is our ability as humans, different than any other creature that we know, to have control of our perspective. We, as humans, have control of our perspective.
Yeah.
And the value in that is you can go back in time and change events, not change the events themselves, but you can change how you view those events.
Right.
And like this gentleman that found the book, he is starting the process of, you know, as I tell people all the time, I will never, ever hear I've heard people say, well, everything happens for a reason, Joel. You know, TJ's death happened for a reason. Well, maybe or maybe not, but that does not comfort me at all to hear that, to be honest with you.
Sure.
I do know I will see my son again. I know that, factually. Energy's right. Energy, and I will see him again. That piece is very comforting. But I also realize that in his death, he is also making an impact on people. He affected this kid from South Carolina that was in foster care, somehow had a positive impact on this dad from Canada that lost his son 2 years before TJ died, or 4 years before TJ died.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing thing taking place to me. So TJ is having an impact now on this family.
Right.
in a very positive way.
Yeah.
And that's exciting to me, because it isn't something that we normally think about. The impact that people have, good or bad, is not limited to just this, what we're familiar with. It goes forwards and it goes backwards, and I love how the universe puts all this together. And like you're saying, there are, whatever term you want to use, you know, there are no random events, or everything that's taking place is created by our thoughts. Everything.
Yeah, it's probably better to say that every random event isn't truly random, but it appears random.
It appears random, and it's driven by our thoughts. And some of them are insignificant seeming at times, and they can be big, or other times they may seem big and they can be insignificant. I have a client that I'm working with, really nice man. He does a lot of high-end project management stuff, multiple million-dollar accounts.
Wow.
And he had an issue on one of his bids, and it's very complex, but I'll make it as simple as I can explain. He was very concerned that he had made a massive error, and he was dreading it, and we start talking about it. I said, look, I don't know his business, so I don't know if this is a massive error or not, but the way you're dreading it and talking about it, when you start presenting it, I guarantee you it's going to be presented as a massive error.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's not going to go over well. And we reframed it where he started to say, I may have made a mistake. He said, but I wanted to bring it to the committee before it becomes a mistake. And he worded it in a way where everybody thought about it. They looked at it. They go, well, if it is a problem, we'll address it down the road. But at this point, we're so far ahead of it. The fact you thought about it is really a positive. Thank you.
Well, which was not what he feared was going to happen at all.
No, he was prepared to get fired.
Right.
And it turned out to be just a very minor, not even an event. But if he would have went in with the other attitude, it could have changed it. So when I say some insignificant events or seemingly insignificant events could be big events, or seemingly big events could be insignificant. He was geared up for that to be a huge event. His attitude toward that, or her perspective toward that, changed, and it turned out to be really a nothing event.
I actually want to include in our discussion here something you and I talked about before we start our program today, which is so often what happens.
we
seem to do that every week.
We do.
But one of the things we talked about before the program, we do tend to go off on tangents too, and talk about stuff way, way out there. In this particular case, we were talking about the nature of how people buy things. And I made the comment, something to the effect that people buy on emotion, and in fact, they always buy on emotion, and as a result, purchases are always irrational because emotions are irrational. They may be driven by something that is meaningful to the person, but when you try to measure it in terms of the overall population, each given transaction looks irrational because everybody has different values and different interests and different needs and so forth. So there's no real rationality to it. And really, that's not a whole lot different from what we're talking about here. The fact that he went into that meeting, well, first of all, you helped him go into the meeting with a positive framework, a positive viewpoint. That made a huge difference, because just as emotions affect sales, they also affect our interactions with other people. It's the same kind of effect. And literally, everybody has an emotional reaction to every interaction that they have. If that emotional reaction is positive, it's amazing how far they'll go to justify how good it was to have the interaction. If the interaction had a strongly negative emotional connotation, it's amazing how far they'll go to turn that interaction into a negative interaction, to find the worst possible side of it. The same event.
Yes.
It's not just the case of a guy with a traumatic situation where he's afraid he's going to lose his job. Like you say, it's on the smallest things too. That's really important to understand. Every interaction we have with other people is primarily emotionally based, not logically based. And that's a hard concept. Trust somebody who has believed in logic all his life. That is a tough concept to come to grips with. But it is the simple fact. every interaction you have with someone is going to be dependent upon and driven by the emotional context. And that's what you were helping him do. You were helping him to derive a positive emotional context that was so successful, it produced a result that absolutely blew his mind.
Yeah, and he once we get into this place of understanding things are going to happen, bad things are going to happen. There's not, life has that. However, a lot of this stuff is out of our knowledge and control in the beginning. Our response to it is always in our control. And that when you understand that, you really control everything. And that does give you control over a situation. It doesn't change the situation, but your perspective of it does. And as I said, I'm not familiar with another creature that has that ability to choose their perspective. The dog's reality is dictated to him by him and his immediate surroundings. He doesn't get to say, there's not a conscious thought within a dog that's able to choose that perspective. And
I may take issue with that, but I understand your point, so I'll leave it
right.
For a moment.
Okay, yeah, let's say that for another one. I also say dogs always choose the happy perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do see
and
that.
Cats as well.
Yeah, but within the context for us, we get to choose happy or sad. There's a choice, is my point.
Absolutely.
There's a choice taking place inside of us, and we've been conditioned to go to the default negative side for so long. And now as we step forward—
And we're really good at it, by the way.
We're professionals. We're the best.
We're amazingly good at it.
Right. And so being able to step back and understand if we can put out there what we're seeking— we've talked about this one before too, but I'll do a quick reminder of a gentleman that was trying desperately to sell a book, and he went to New York City to see some publishers, and most of them were just slamming the door in his face, and he had lined up several publishers to see. So he was walking to the next publisher that he had scheduled after being turned down, and he had to cross the street because the whole sidewalk was torn up of where he was going. So he sort of like, oh, I had to cross the street, go down a block. He was almost angry that he had to cross the street.
Mm-hmm.
As he was walking, he sees an old friend. Shocking to run into this
in
old
New
friend.
York. Wow.
In New York City, which is so random.
Yeah.
They're both from another city. And he's like, are you kidding me? And he said, yes, it's so good to see you. They're talking. And he said, his friend asked him, what are you doing in town? He said, well, I have a book, and I'm trying to get it published. And the friend said, are you kidding me? And it turns out the friend was now working for a publishing company.
Wow.
He went with the – he said, well, call me afterwards. And, of course, he got turned down at the other places. So he called the friend, and he said, well, you know, the last shot result. The friend put in a good word. Long story short, Dr. Seuss. Got his book published that way.
Wow.
That's amazing to me. And all of that started with him running into a friend in New York City that he hasn't seen that happened to be starting in a publishing company. There are hundreds of these stories out there, Walt. Thousands, millions. That's hundreds of a ridiculous number. It's millions of these stories, and they take place all the time.
By the way, they are random.
Yes.
We just have to understand what the word random means.
That's the point. Random is a tool of the universe. It's inexplicable any other way. You don't try to put logic in the fact that for those of you who have walked the streets of New York City for any length of time, what are the odds of walking across the street at the exact moment your friend from another city is in town and you pass them? First of all, I don't look at people's faces half the time I'm in New York City. I'm trying to watch where I'm going. And to
plus
run
you don't want to look at some of those faces anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, to say the least. But all of that came together at that exact moment. As you said, the randomness of it is a tool. Random is a tool of the universe. And that had to happen. The guy was selling his book. This person came along. It all happened in a way that it was meant to happen.
Wow.
They ended up being really happy. They signed Dr. Seuss.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing with my friend, my new friend that found the book on the bench. His event started a long time ago, his mindset, when he made his reservation to go to Anna Maria Island in Florida from Canada, he had no clue. There was no intention of running across that. For him to have walked by there and made that reservation on the day that I was literally in Florida for one day. I flew in Saturday, flew out Sunday. I did not know I was going until 2 weeks before I was going. He had the reservation a year before. All of that came together for him to get the book. And that's the encouraging piece that I'm trying to get across to our audiences and to me and to you, and to as a reminder, because we do this show therapeutically as well, is when we put it out there, if you allow it to happen, it will happen. And random is often the most obvious tool of the universe to fulfill these needs and wants and desires.
One of the things also to recognize when we hear a story like the Dr. Seuss story is just how remarkable the timing is. I mean, yes, it's remarkable that they were both in the city at the same time, but it's more remarkable than that, because they could have been both in the same city at the same time, walking on the same street, and if the author had decided to tie his shoelace, he could have missed his friend.
Yes.
If his friend had decided to just poke his head in a deli that he was passing to get a bagel, he would have missed his friend. It takes a complete sequence of little intricate events with just the perfect decision points to reach the situation where they actually meet on that street.
So
it isn't just the timing of them being there on the same day. It's the timing of being there at the same second.
Exactly. That's the piece that just is fascinating to me. I live in a smaller community right outside of Richmond, Virginia. My neighborhood has a really nice grocery store in the middle of it. And I can go to the grocery store 5 times in a month period and never see anybody I know. Now, I know a lot of people here. So the odds of me going and not at least recognizing one person are actually sort of the other way, slim against it. I usually like to go later in the evening and try to avoid the lines as much as I can. So that fact is I have an ability to go in. I don't have a desire to or not to. I'm neutral on whether I see someone, so I'm not trying to attract anything. But most times I go in there, I don't recognize anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's in my little community,
right,
that I know so many people in. I just, to look at going to New York City and to randomly, like you say, at that moment, that crossing, that, you know, there could have been a person walking in between them. That there were so many things that could have been taking place, but they found each other. And all of these things get launched. I believe these events are the foundation of what we do. Last week we mentioned the term the law of action, where you're taking action. The law of action allows for the randomness of the universe to work. By you taking action, by you getting out there, by you taking steps, in this case, the gentleman literally taking steps on the streets of New York, the randomness of the universe allowed this to happen. And of course, we're going to have our skeptics, like you're saying. There'll be people say, well, yes, this is, you know, and be able to explain it away. This is not something that we have the ability to comprehend, because you're literally breaking it down into, if you were, I would love for a mathematician to say, okay, all the people that were in that area that day passing each other at that exact second, what would the odds of that be? I mean, it's just very, again, just very odd.
I can actually give an example.
It's a very long shot, but the fact that these...
Yeah. I can actually give an example that reinforces that. It's a story of when Louise and I still lived in Virginia. We lived in Northern Virginia. You're closer to Richmond. We were up closer toward Manassas. And one year on the 4th of July, we went into Washington, D.C., which, of course, is right next to Virginia, and to watch the fireworks. Now, I'm sure you've been to the fireworks in D.C., and so you know that the fireworks are held focused around the Washington Monument.
Yes.
Which is on the National Mall. It's a pretty big area. And they literally get hundreds of thousands of people on that space in a if it's a really busy big crowd that day, there have been millions. I mean, the Dr. King speech back in the 60s had millions of people on the mall, so you can get a lot of people there. Well, we went to the mall, and we knew that my sister and her daughter, my niece, were going to be there, but we didn't make any plans to meet with them or anything like that. We just thought, well, you know, we'll keep an eye open in case we see them. And of course, we get there, and it's tens, hundreds of thousands of people. Like, we're never going to find them in this. So it's like, forget it. There's just no way. But Louise was determined. She really wanted to see Michaela, my niece. And so we said, well, okay. They're here somewhere. Let's just focus on, see if we can find them. Let's try. We're still in the early stages of experimenting with the law of attraction. Let's see if we can use it. Let's see if we can find these people. So we just thought about Michaela for a bit, and then we picked a direction and started walking. Now, at this point, we were probably about, I'm going to guess, 1,000 feet from the Washington Monument. So we're fairly close to it. We did not start walking toward the monument. We started walking perpendicular to it. So in a weird direction. It wasn't toward any particular thing. And do you know, within 10 seconds, we spotted Michaela?
Wow.
Ten seconds.
Wow.
We're not talking like minutes or hours. 10 to 15 seconds later, we spotted Michaela.
That gives me chills.
Now, I'd like to hear the mathematician explain that one. Other than to say, well, you're going to have hits occasionally. Oh, come on. That's a bizarre hit. That's like a winning the lottery hit.
Yes, it is everything taking place because you're putting it out there. You're feeling it. Before I was understanding how the law of attraction worked, I was a manager of several group homes in the Tampa area, and we dealt with mentally delayed young men and women. Some young teens, and I got a call that one of our sister group homes had lost a young man that got separated from the group at a festival where there were over, it was the Tampa State Fair, and there were probably 100,000 people walking over, I don't know how many acres, we're talking a very large, multiple football fields, I mean probably 25 football fields size, just huge, with events all over the place. And they called all of the supervisory staff in to try to find him. The police were looking for him. I walk in the gate, and I'm really thinking, okay, I just, where would I go? What can I be attracted to? What tool can I come up with? I hear music off to the side, and I remember this young man loved drums.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a loud drum beat. And I said, he's by the drums.
Uh-huh.
I walk right up to him. He says, hey, Joel, what are you doing? I said, I'm here to find you. And I walk in, walk straight to him, I call everybody, we meet, everything's fine. That was a similar event, where knowing stuff is out there. Say, well, he loved drums, he'd be there. Well, there were 70 people looking for him. And I walked right to it.
You were the one who found them.
Yeah, and these are things that are. I've had other events where, like you're talking about, where you just things happen. Running into people in airports, everybody that you meet potentially has a life-altering interaction that they have with you, and that's the part why I encourage people to put themselves out there to take action. The law of attraction says that our thoughts can become reality, which I completely believe. You know that. I live that way. I also know your actions. You have to believe your actions are matching. If you're sitting at home saying, I want to randomly inherit $100 million, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying the idea that you getting out and moving is going to make it much more possible that the random events of the law of attraction will bring somebody into your life to fulfill what you're seeking. And that's the key. The movement, the taking action, the all of it coming together, and our audience can understand, hey, I got to get these thoughts right. When my thoughts are right, there's nothing that becomes impossible. Nothing. Zero. Nothing.
It's absolutely true. And in fact, there's a corollary that goes along with it, which is when you are deliberately trying to attract something, you have to recognize that it's not necessarily going to happen exactly the way you intended. To give you an example, you mentioned meeting people in airports. That's what cued this in my mind. I had one of those experiences one time. Louise and I had it. We were traveling, and to be honest, I don't even remember where we were traveling to. But we were doing a two-hop thing. You know, you get your airplane, you fly to a hub, and then you fly to your destination. Well, we were at the hub, and the hub was Pittsburgh. And while we were at the hub waiting for our next flight, we were thinking, would it be cool if we had friends to travel with, you know, to do one of these trips with? Because, I mean, we have a lot of fun ourselves, but it'd be even more fun if we had some really close friends that we were doing it with. Within, I'd say, probably half hour to an hour of that, we spotted another couple at another gate across the aisle, across the you know, the walkway there. And Louise said, "Isn't that Mayor?" And I looked closely, and sure enough, it was a couple that we knew from a swing dance community we were part of. We went over and saw them, greeted them, and sure enough, they were traveling on vacation too. Now, they were going to a different destination from us. So the law of attraction wasn't able to match us up with somebody who was going to the same destination. But within a very short time of us having that thought, they did match us up with somebody who was actually traveling that we could meet in an airport. And let's be honest, as you inferred, how likely is it you're going to find somebody you know in an airport in a hub that you never go to?
Right. It's fascinating. And that's why never giving up hope, never allowing the negative thoughts to win, and really believing that everything is possible, that when you really get on board with that, that's when you can start using the law of attraction in a way that you're amazed at. You're amazed. I love to be amazed how things happen. I see miracles. The advantage of my job is I get to see miracles weekly.
You have both a horrible job and a wonderful job.
Yes. To see people implement these techniques and change everything in their life is so incredible. I have multiple people in the last 6 months that were chronically unemployed that are all now employed. Mm. They're thriving. They're understanding. And they're, all that changed was their perspective. They quit believing they were unemployable. They quit believing. They started looking at their strengths. When they interviewed, they go in with the strength of an interview and almost convincing themselves, if they can really convince themselves, this job is perfect for them. And that they would be a perfect match. If they could convince themselves first, then they're going to be able to convince the person hiring them that would be a perfect match. Mm-hmm. And that you know, when we started talking in the very beginning of this show about the gentleman finding a copy of The Bench on the bench, he is walking with his wife, not necessarily knowing what he's putting out there, but he knew. And as he described in his email to me, that he always he said, "I need my life back. I want to find some joy again. I want to do stuff again." And since my son died, I have not, for 6 years, I haven't been able to do that. A new hope, a new way to look at it, changing his mindset, looking at things from a whole nother way, has given him some peace and has put him on a path. I can't wait to see what happens in his life in the next year or so.
Fascinating thing there, too. We've talked about in the past how if you want to attract something, you want to attract the positive, the thing itself, not the absence of the thing. And that's because when you do that, when you focus on the thing itself, it's much, much easier to attract it. But here's a case of a guy who was focusing probably a great deal on the absence, in this case, the absence of his son, the absence of his peace of mind, the absence of his happiness. He focused on just enough of the positive side and did it for a long enough period of time, and from what you're describing, it was years, where he finally was able to attract a situation that would help bring the thing rather than the absence of the thing.
Yes.
Amazing thing about the law of attraction, even when we set the odds against it, when we make it as difficult as possible for the universe to deliver what we really want by focusing on the wrong stuff, it's still possible to attract it. It's much harder. It takes a lot longer. In fact, if we were able to focus our attention on purely the things that we're trying to attract and purely off of 0% of the time focusing on the absence of those things, we'd be attracting stuff instantly. There'd be no delay.
No delay whatsoever. Yes.
But we're human. We're still learning. We're still trying to get a grip on how this whole thing works. So we make mistakes regularly. And yet, despite that, despite all the mistakes, he still managed to attract that book into his life.
Well, and he also describes that, and I haven't talked to him in person, so I'm putting a little assumption in all of this, but over the years he's changed from realizing, okay, I horribly miss my son, but independent of that, I want to feel better. I want peace again. He started the shift to wanting the peace, and for him to be there again, going through that same cycle of statements we've said a couple of times already, of everything coming together when he's feeling that way, is just an amazing chain of events that reinforces with me. It's very solid with me. I have no doubt that things are in my life are going to continue to go as I want them to go. Things have been great in my life. Things are amazing in my life. And they will continue to be because I'm attracting that in my life. And that's a reminder from this when this gentleman comes along and he says that. He gets this book and he reinforces that. My son, who was a dirt poor, horribly neglected foster care kid, had an incredible impact on a family from Canada. And helped a to me that is it. That's an amazing transformation.
It's fantastic,
and you'll never hear me. And this is something that I don't like to use the word never. the idea of TJ's death is something that I'm never going to say. Oh, this was a good thing. It happened, or that's something that I won't do. However, I can see good that has come from him after this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference, but I see where it's relevant. And everybody that has experienced the loss of a child, that you have to get there your own way. There's different forms of grieving. And I encourage anyone that has experienced such a loss to understand, first of all, your child would want you to be happy. Your child would not want you to be stuck in this. Your child would be, of course, TJ would want me to be happy. He would be angry if he thought I were laying around doing nothing, worried about him. If to know my son, you would know that he would not tolerate that for about 8 seconds. and so within this, a person's finding peace through the law of attraction when he didn't even know he was doing it.
Yeah.
When I put that book there, I never knew the man. I didn't know who was going to read it. I didn't know if a county worker was going to come by and just throw it in the garbage. I didn't know any of that, but I did ask the universe to find someone that this could be helpful to. And it did. Yeah.
Which is really, really, really cool. No matter how you look at it.
Well, and that's sort of the idea when you put out there, when you help people, I told someone the other day, I was doing a session and they were telling me about all the negatives in their lives. And I stopped them and I said, look, I don't mind you listing the negatives because I understand this is a therapeutic value for you. I said, I can make a referral to you if you'd like, if you want to continue to do that. But I need to know what your goals are. And this person sat back and said, what are you talking about? I said, what are you wanting? Well, I'm depressed and I want to get better. I said, okay, I understand. So you want health. You're looking at health. I'm depressed. I go, no, you're looking at health. You want to feel good again. You want to be happy.
That's an interesting point you're raising here because
yes.
I had a conversation like this with a friend of mine, good friend of mine, who is a devout Christian. He is what he calls a true Christian. And yet when we have conversations, often he's calling me because he needs a little support. He needs he either needs to vent or he needs something along that line. And when he's in that mode, he inevitably says he inevitably starts with the phrase, I don't mean to be negative, but, and then he proceeds to be negative for
exactly.
The next 15 minutes.
Right.
And the thought that goes through my mind is, why did you say that? What's the point? Are you trying to convince me that this is somehow positive? Are you trying to convince me that what you're about to say is not so bad as it really sounds? What are you trying to tell me? I'm wondering how you respond, because I'm sure you get stuff like that from the people you're dealing with who are stuck in that negative mindset, that negative spot, and they're saying, well, I'm not really being negative.
Well, and my job, the good news is when people come to me, I would be able to point out to him, say, well, first of all, you said you're not trying to be negative. You are. I mean, you just were negative. Whether you're trying to or not, you are. Once again, the law of attraction doesn't care if you're trying to or not. It's picking up what you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody gets like that, and they, in my mind, when you're negative and you're saying all these things, you're accepting, as we've talked about before, you're not accepting responsibility. It's a huge responsibility when you understand your happiness is your responsibility, mm-hmm. no one else's.
Yeah.
That's a huge responsibility.
It's gigantic, yes.
It's a lot easier to think, well, you know, God's trying me. He's putting me through these paces. He's doing this. He's doing that.
Or worse, it's the devil who's doing it.
The devil, the devil.
The world is being tempted by the devil.
Right. Whatever that mindset is, even in the Bible they speak the simple sentence of, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. You know, Jesus is telling people in the Bible, hey, you got the power, buddy. You got it. It's here. If you ever seen a mustard seed, that's really a tiny bit of faith. That's a tiny little
bit. It's pretty tiny. They're little. You need a microscope.
Yeah, exactly. So the concept that they're even getting across, but it's, I think oftentimes, this is not a slight to anybody that is, you know, not trying to talk anybody's religion down. I think oftentimes religion is a chance to blame it on other events.
It often gets used that way, including by true believers.
Yes.
They on the one hand, there's a duality that goes on. On the one hand, they really believe in their beliefs. My friend is an example. He has an amazingly strong mindset. I mean, when he gets in that negative frame that I was describing, I've learned not to try to argue with him. I've learned not to try to change his mindset or anything, because he's much stronger at it than I am. I can't change his mindset. He is so strong at it. And I think to myself, wow, if you would only just decide to take responsibility, to use your word because that's a great word, just take responsibility for making yourself happy with that mindset, my God, there's nothing that could stop you.
If we could get those people, if those people had the ability to, they do have the ability, if they would come up with the willingness to change it and change the way you're doing it, you're exactly right. That mindset projected the right way, there would be no limit for that gentleman.
And
it's sad to watch friends come in or clients come in, and I will hear, you know, I'll ask, one of the first things I'm doing is I'm trying to determine why they're there, what their goals are, and what areas we're going to be working on. And I have actually told clients, I've referred clients to other therapists because they were not able to convert from the negative base.
Mm.
And they said, you're going to turn my business away? And I said, well,
you recognize that you just couldn't help them the way they needed to be helped. There had to be somebody else with a different approach who would help them better.
I said, someone that will wallow with you in this is somebody who you need, but I can't do that. I'm going to be looking for solutions. I'm not going to allow that negative dialogue that you're bringing to the table, the historical stuff that you keep bringing up that is destroying you. I can't allow that. Because eventually you're just going to get worse.
It reminds me of my wife, Louise, who, like you, was also a therapist for many years. And she once told me a story about a therapist that she saw. She was there as the person getting the treatment. And that therapist, I won't go into the details because obviously those are her business. But the lesson that came out of it was at one point the therapist said, essentially, Louise, you're going to have to fish or cut bait because I'm just not going to tolerate this anymore.
Good.
And
good.
The only way that we're going to continue to meet is if you start taking actions. And it just blew her mind. you don't hear that, right?
And if more people took that stance, but it like you're taking with your friend about when he becomes negative, they get entrenched in that. I do have empathy for them because I lived that way for so long, and they're built into a belief system.
You have that, of anybody. can empathize with almost anyone who's going through something horrific, because you've been through so much horrific stuff.
Right. And to come out on the other side and understand, wow, the horrific pieces in my life have empowered me. They've made me stronger. They've moved me further. And they've, because of my mindset attached to it, it's brought me so much in my life and understanding my life that, well, I certainly don't want to repeat a lot of those things.
But no, of course not. you're not a glutton for punishment.
No. While I don't want to repeat them, I have become, you know, incredibly grateful that I endured what and overcame and have had the ability to go back and sort of reassign perspective on those events. And that's an amazing thing.
You learned how to find the good and the bad.
Yes.
Which is a real art form.
And once you do that, then you change everything.
Yep.
And you change your past as well as your future. And that's a important mindset to maintain. So I'm hoping that our audience can continue to push forward. If you don't think the law of attraction is working on your behalf, again, please feel free to contact us. We would love to talk to you about it, give you some tips, pointers, or even if you would like to debate it, we would love to do that as well.
And the email addresses are real easy. They're, all you have to know is what our names are. He's Joel. I'm Walt. Once you know that, you know the email address, walt@loatoday.net, joel@loatoday.net. It's a no-brainer.
Exactly. So I really hope we hear from somebody. That would be fantastic. That would
be great. We actually are going to hear from somebody next week. We're going to have somebody on who I first interviewed, actually, Joel, just before the first time I interviewed you about 3 years ago. This guy is amazing. He's been declared clinically dead twice.
Wow. Wow.
And on top of that, he's got this massive tumor in his body that was supposed to have killed him 25 years ago.
That's not really a very efficient tumor, is it?
And he's going to tell us all about that, and plus the cool things he's been working on lately. His name is David Bennett. You'll want to tune in. It's going to be a great show.
I look forward to that.
You know, something really to look forward to.
Yeah, that'd be great. I can't wait.
In fact, I like the idea of that being a springboard for future meetings, future people calling in. Maybe having David on is our way of getting the universe, getting in alignment with our vibration of the universe or whatever, so that we're attracting other people to call in.
Well,
maybe that's going to be what breaks the dam.
That might be. And last week we had mentioned it on air as well. Somebody called in. Now, I know you reached out to him separately, but you did email me right after we got off our recording session, said he would be on.
Yeah, that's true. I got that email immediately after we were done, and he had sent it right then, immediately after we were done. So it's not like he had sent it before and I was turning it into something. It's like the universe said, oh, I'm going to kick David to send Walt an email.
Exactly. So that to me, that has a little piece of randomness to it, which I like, which is a great thing. And if we draw one thing from today's show, the word random. Is, yeah. You know, I love how you said we need to come up with a new definition of what that means.
Yeah, random isn't something that is outside of our control. That's really what it comes down to. All so-called random events are intentions. That's the true definition of what random is. And it seems contradictory. It seems impossible. I mean, if it's intentional, how can it be random? But you have to understand that what seems to be random is intentional. It's just that you can't see who had the intention, and that's why it seems random.
That's the point. It's amazing.
Yep.
It really is.
It is. Well, this has been a great one, Joel. We say that every week, but this one's been really good because I think we broke a little new ground on this one.
I agree. This really felt like we – hopefully the audience felt it as well, too.
Well, I hope so, too. I hope it brings them back next time. And if they do come back next time, which I hope – and I know you hope they do, then we'll see them all. We'll see you all here next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem-